welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Nittany Blues Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we hope that you had a nice holiday weekend out there. I'm sure a lot of you are still just trying to get back into the swing of things with your usual work day or your everyday life. Vince and I are doing the same, but we also wanted to make sure that we hopped on the pod this week. Penn State doesn't have a football game this week, unfortunately, but we have plenty of news to talk about. We want to chat about the upcoming conference championship games. The all Big Ten teams were announced. We've got some rumblings on the offensive coordinator search, and we have a plethora of updates on different Penn State programs and their upcoming competitions and events. So, Vince, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing as well as I can be. How are you?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing all right. I think my heart is still recovering from Sunday night with Sunday evening with the Eagles, because for about 65-70 minutes of that, however long it was until the final drive where the Eagles scored, I was just like in a perpetual state of rage.
It was a very frustrating game to watch, especially with the couple of turnovers that we had. So that was pretty rough. And it was kind of a weird feeling, because last week when we were playing the Chiefs, I was just like, okay, we're not the better team, or we're not playing like it, and we don't really deserve to win this one. And somehow they did. And then this one was the same thing, 17-7 score at halftime. But I felt like the Bills weren't as good of a team, and we started to come back a little bit, and then the Bills would score again. And I was just thinking, man, are we going to be the better team than not win this one and somehow win the KC game? But yeah. I was really happy when the Bills got that touchdown, because I was like, okay, they're going to like get that first down and just get the game-winning field goal, or they're going to get a touchdown with not a lot of time. So I was happy they scored, and thankfully, Jalen moved them down the field, and we have like the best kicker on planet Earth and Jake Elliott, and he could just kick a 59-yard field goal through like a monsoon. Doesn't matter. He's just the most clutch kicker of all time, so... Yeah, really, really impressive. And then in overtime, you're thinking, oh, the Eagles lose the coin toss. This is terrible. And Bills get a field goal. They settle. And, we go to the other end for a touchdown. So, crazy game. Probably one of the best all-time Eagles games I've seen. Where did that game rank in, like, your all-time favorite Eagles games, either postseason or regular season?
Oh man, that's a tough one to answer. I would say it's definitely like in the upper third of like all games, because there have been some classics, especially over the past like 7 to 10 years. I mean, all the games in like 2017 were awesome because the Eagles were just kicking ass every week. A lot of like last year was also fun because it was in kind of that same vein. The years with Vic and Deshaun and Shady. I mean, there are some like classic games, like, the offensive explosion against the what was at that time the Washington Redskins. I mean, that was like an all-time game. But as far as like, just clutching up to win a game when the team is not playing anywhere near their best, I think this might be one of the best examples of an Eagles team accomplishing just that, because, there's been so many times, that we can both remember in the past where the Eagles will lose that game because, they're just not on their best. Nobody's like really clicking, like certain things just aren't working very well. Like it didn't seem like any cornerback was able to cover any receiver of the Bills at times. And they were just interested in letting Josh Allen convert every third and long using his legs. So
he's like a track star out there.
Yeah.
Probably like a long distance runner in terms of yards.
Very big and very heavy track star. But yeah, so we've seen plenty of games like that where the Eagles just look listless and they lose the game. But this was not that case. You have a little bit of magic in there. Jalen, he's just got some special attribute about him. I don't know what it is. I don't think you can really define it or attach a label to it. The guy just knows how to win games. And that throw that he threw to OZ in the back of the end zone, I thought, you know, that was just like the perfect example of it. I think OZ should absolutely have that spot over Quez Watkins every day of the week and twice on Sundays. But, you know, just great stuff. And I mean, Jake Elliott, I mean, he's, I think at this point, you probably have to put him above David Akers as like the best Eagles kicker ever. Cause I mean, Akers was an Iron Man, but Jake has just got some miraculous kick.
Yeah. I never thought in our lifetime we would find a kicker for the Eagles where we'd be like, man, this guy might be better than David Akers. Like, I never thought that would happen.
I mean, as far as like being a fan favorite, Akers will always have like that special place in everybody's heart. He's just kind of like the Jason Kelsey of kickers for the Eagles. Like, everybody just loves him. Everybody will always remember him because of like his great exploits with the Eagles, you know. So it's that. But
I think he might be the best left-footed kicker in NFL history all time, not just Eagles.
Nice. All right. I'll take that.
I don't know if I have any statistic to like
prove that,
but I feel like most kickers are right-footed.
That is true. Cool. So let's move on here. So we have a bunch of news to cover here. Let's start, though, with the all Big Ten teams. So since the regular season has wrapped up, the Big Ten has its vaunted conference championship matchup between Michigan and Iowa, which is, you know, just a yearly occurrence of at this point of the West just serving up a sacrificial lamb for the East to win the Big Ten championship in advance of the college football playoffs. So this year is looking very much like it's going to be the same story. But since the regular season has wrapped up, we've got all Big Ten teams as voted on by the coaches and the media. So there is definitely a bunch of names that from Penn State that appeared on these lists. So I want to just read these off for you, Vince, and I want to get some of your reactions here. So first and foremost, we should definitely shout out Olufashinu, who was named the offensive lineman of the year for the Big Ten, unanimous first team selection by the coaches and the media. So I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised are you?
0.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's been awesome. So let's then switch over to the defense because, you know, we're going to start at like, you know, red hot on fire, and then we'll kind of work our way down in terms of heat. So as far as the defense is concerned, though, pretty much almost the entire defense, like the whole starting defense, appeared on the all Big Ten team in some form or fashion. We had three first teamers on the defense in Chop Robinson, Abdul Carter, and Adisa Isaac, with Abdul Carter appearing on the first team for coaches and Adisa Isaac appearing on the first team for the media. So that, I mean, that's honestly just all you really need to know about, like, just how great this defense was, that it had three first team all conference selections, two at the defensive end spots. I mean, that's just crazy. So we all know like what kind of season Adisa had, you know, even though he is maybe a little overshadowed by Chop just in terms of his, you know, every down, like, playability and stuff like that. But Adisa is just so steady, just so good. Then moving down the list, we have Kalen King appearing on the second team for both coaches and media. We had Danai Dennis Sutton being named to third team on the coaches. And we had Johnny Dixon and Daquan Hardy both appearing on the third team for coaches. And then we have a slew of players getting honorable mentions here. We've got Kobe King, Jalen Reed, Kevin Winston Jr., who I'm honestly a little surprised he didn't get third team at least. Curtis Jacobs. We have got Zane Durant and Devon Ellis. So, I mean, like, I pretty much just listed off like 12 to 13 names there who were, you know, in some form or fashion named to the all Big Ten defensive team. So,
it kind of makes me think of the Jason Kelsey Super Bowl speech in the Mumbers outfit where he's like, it's the whole team.
I mean, that's a great way. Yeah.
Pretty much, it's the whole team sense.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. I wonder if, do we know if Adisa Isaac is going to be here for another year, or was this his last year?
I think this is his last year of eligibility, but with COVID, you just never know with the COVID year.
True.
I mean, I hope he has an extra one.
Yeah. No, I was just kind of thinking, because if he's able to like parlay this, you know, first team all conference selection and just kind of bankroll that into his NFL draft eligibility, I wonder if he'd be able to sneak into the first round too. You know, just as like kind of like striking while the iron is hot and while his stock is high.
Yeah, so I think this is his last year, because in 2020 it says true sophomore season, and then 2021 says sophomore season. Okay. And then it jumps. He doesn't have a junior season. It goes from sophomore to redshirt junior in 2022.
Sometimes I feel like what you're looking at, it just has a typo or something.
Maybe. So I think, let's see, 2023, 22, mm-hmm. 21, 20. And then freshman year would be 2019.
Okay.
So he might. Yeah, that's only 5 years. I guess that would be if he played every single year, he'd be done.
True. I want to think, though, if my memory serves right, I thought he got an injury redshirt 1 year. But either way,
it does say he appeared in 11 games his freshman year, so I don't think he'd be eligible for a redshirt.
Well, not like a medical redshirt, like if he got hurt the next year.
Says appeared in 9 games sophomore year. His sophomore season was a redshirt in 2021. So, yeah, he should have his COVID year.
Okay.
Maybe sick to get Adisa Isaac for one more year.
I mean, that'd be huge. Like, can you imagine him and Denai Dennis Sutton coming back?
That would be great, especially since I think Chop is graduating.
Yes. At this point, he's basically already a confirmed first rounder in the NFL draft. Like, He's gone.
with a name like that, you know, he's getting drafted first round based off of the name of alone. And Gus Johnson's great. If Gus Johnson gives you a nickname, you're just going in the first round. Like,
that's true. Yeah, exactly. He'll go, you know, right around the same time as Mr. Maserati Marv.
That'd be a good prediction, saying that Chop Robinson gets drafted over Maserati Marv.
Hell no. There's no way that's happening.
That would make my day. Calling it.
Dude, I would be like dumbfounded if that happens. Cause it's gonna go Caleb, Drake, Olu, and Joe Alt in some configuration of those four. And then I think it's Harrison at 5, like no matter what. That's my thought.
So you do think Olu can get ahead of Maserati Marv?
Yes, I do. Yeah, he's good.
I think he might go over number one overall, honestly. Like, Olu. I'm Marvin Harrison Jr.
Oh, wow, okay.
Like, I think he's that good. Like, he's too good to pass up.
No, I think he is, too. I mean, he just pure skill and ability alone, like, he is worthy of a number one pick. You know, it's just the way that the draft always goes, though, is, you know, they always go for the quarterback at one.
Well, I think the Bears have the first overall pick because they have the Panthers pick.
True.
And they got Justin Fields and reunite him with his old teammate. Like, maybe. That's probably what he needs in Chicago, honestly.
I think he needs a lot more than just a receiver, but he'll certainly help.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right, we got the defense nailed down here. Let's move on to the special team. So this list is going to be a bit shorter, but that's just because there's not that many special teamers on any particular team. So Daquan Hardy, even though he was kind of a later season or later in the season insertion as the punt returner, he was named as the second team All Big Ten on the coaches' side as well as in the media. Alex Falcons got some love. He was third team with coaches and second team with the media. And then we've got a couple of honorable mentions here for Riley Thompson, as well as Nick Singleton as kick returner. So any thoughts, reactions, surprises, comments?
Do you know who was ahead of Daquan Hardy? Was it the Iowa returner, DeGene?
Yeah, that probably is my guess.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's fair. Although he did get a raw deal on that kick return against Minnesota. Like, Iowa should really be 11-1.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that they literally are a botched call away from being 11-1, and that one being a shutout against their the one team that they played that was good from the East. You know,
right? Yeah. 31 points, like. Yeah. It's just, it baffles my mind that they could be ahead of us in the polls just because they played nobody.
I know. Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, at the end of the day, that still means that Penn State has a shutout over the number 16 team. So I'm not going to complain.
That's true. I guess that makes us look good.
Yeah, sure. we'll bankroll that. We'll go with that. So, all right. So special teams done. Then we have the offense. So we already talked about Olu Fashanu. He heads up, you know, both the coaches and the media lists. We had Hunter Norzad being selected second team by both coaches and media. We had Katron Allen getting second team by the coaches, third team by media. Nick Singleton being named third team coaches and third team in the media. Tyler Warren getting third team by the coaches and honorable mention by the media. Then we have like a slew of other honorable mentions here. We've got Drew Aller, Theo Johnson, Keandre Lambert-Smith, JB Nelson, which I thought was kind of interesting because of, you know, the games that he missed with injury. So obviously made a huge impression on the games that he was able to compete in. We have Caden Wallace, Salim Wormley. Oh man, I'm gonna botch his name here. Vega Yane, backup left guard, who filled in for JB. And I think that does it. So I would say the only kind of, I guess, surprise in my mind, like with these lists, is I kind of would have thought that Tyler Warren would get 13, at least 13 by both coaches and media because he was like that good and that rock solid. But other than that, I think this is a pretty fair list.
Yeah, no complaints there. Like Stover on Ohio State's really good. And yep. The Big Ten in general does have a lot of good tight ends. So, you know, it's tough when they're all that good. Like you really have to stand out to get those top two, three spots.
It's true. Yeah, I wonder how that just naturally came to be that like the Big Ten became the hub for college tight ends that then transcend to go to the NFL. Because like a lot of the, you know, NFL tight ends that are, you know, notable right now, not named Travis Kelce, a lot of them came from the Big Ten. Like, how did that come to pass?
Big Ten, best conference in football.
There we go. Are you
on the east side?
Yeah. Yeah. Soon to be on the west side. Yeah. How are the tight ends out of UCLA and USC?
Not sure. I haven't heard of any when I've seen their game, so
I think that should tell you all you need to know. Yeah, sure.
I imagine like they're good because they're playing at a Power Five school, but I imagine those schools use their wide receivers more.
I guess that's fair. Yeah, or in USC's case, they're just relying on Caleb Williams to just scramble around and, you know, just pull stuff out of thin air. But nonetheless, so. That's the all Big Ten teams. We're probably going to be hearing more about all America teams here pretty shortly. I'm guessing that they're probably waiting for the conference championship games to wrap up to release most of those lists. So I would say that we're probably expecting Olu to be first team all American for most of these lists. Any other names that you think can or rather should appear on those lists?
That is tough. All American. I think Chop has a good chance to be up there.
Yep.
He'd probably be the most likely. And then
Adisa?
Maybe Adisa. Yeah, I'd say like he has 13? A shot.
Yeah, okay.
Potentially.
Mm-hmm.
What are the first team guys that we have? Because if they're not first team if they're not first team in the Big Ten, then they're not gonna be all American.
Yeah, no, that's fair. We had three on defense. It was Chop, Adisa, and Carter.
I think Abdul Carter has a good shot. I do think, like, I feel like it's a little smaller, though, because I feel like his freshman year, he really stood out more. And then this year, I feel like teams kind of game planned around him to try to avoid him. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he wasn't making quite as much of an impact as his freshman year. So I think just because of production, I think there's a shot that he doesn't get it. But, you know, in terms of like athleticism and like linebackers I'd want on my team, like Abdul would definitely be in that all-American range.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. Cool. So yeah, we'll have more to talk about that probably as early as next week. So some other news to kind of go through here from the football side of things. So Penn State, after thrashing Michigan State 42-0, did move up a spot in the college football playoff rankings. They're ranked number 10 in this most recent edition of the rankings. So they're back up in the top 10. I would say they're, you know, definitely still in solid position to vie for a New Year's Six Bowl. You know, what's kind of funny is, like, we were talking last week about all these nightmare scenarios of certain teams winning and just throwing the whole system into whack, you know, as far as who's getting into the playoff and who's going to get what bowl game and stuff like that. So I guess I forget who it was, but somebody spoke to the you know, somebody at the Peach Bowl to kind of talk about, okay, like, we know that you have interest in having Penn State appear in your bowl game because they haven't been to your game before in the past. Like, what should Penn State be hoping for when it comes to conference championship weekend? And basically they were like, yeah, they just need to hope that everybody who's supposed to win does win. Because when you have a conference champion who's not going to the college football playoff, that's a New Year's Six bowl insertion right there. So you're talking about, like, your Oklahoma States, your Iowas, and so on and so forth. Like, those are the teams that could upend Penn State's chance of getting into a New Year's Six bowl. So I just thought that was kind of interesting because he was like, yeah, you know, Penn State just needs to hope that, like, what everybody thinks will happen does happen.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing to argue. Do you want to go through these games one by one and kind of say who you think is going to win?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. And then we can kind of swing back into some offensive coordinator stuff. But yeah, so what game do you want to start with?
All right, we'll start with Conference USA. We'll do the ranked teams. So we got New Mexico State at number 24, Liberty, who is undefeated. So the Aggies recently upset Auburn at Jordan-Hare, and they're taking on the undefeated Liberty. What's their mascot? The Hawks?
I think they're the Flames.
The Flames?
I think so.
Let me check that out. Well, the mascot, let's see what the mascot looks. The mascot looks like a hawk, but I think you're right. I think it might be the Flames. But who you got winning that one?
Yeah, so I think that New Mexico State is, you know, they're having a really, like, special season, you know, just having some of those signature win moments in there. Jerry Kill, who actually is very familiar with Big Ten football. He was the coach at Minnesota for quite a while. He's currently coaching there, doing a great job. But I think Liberty just has this. I think they're, you know, they just probably have the edge, you know, wire to wire to win this one.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Liberty as well. They're undefeated for a reason. And I don't think it's wise to, you know, pick a three loss team over an undefeated team unless you have really specific reasons. Now, I think it'll be a close game. New Mexico State upset Auburn at home, and you don't just upset Power Five conferences if you're not any good. So
it's true.
Especially with a program like Auburn. So I do think that, you know, New Mexico State does have a good chance. I think it'll be a close game, but I'm going to give the edge to Liberty.
Cool.
All right, so that one was Friday at 7. Friday at 8 o'clock, we got Oregon and Washington and Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Who's
got Oregon? On? Yeah, I think it's Oregon. I think at this point right now, I mean, it may have shifted since the spreads were first announced, but Oregon was favored by like 9 points or something like that. In
9.5.
Yeah. So Vegas, you know, ironically enough, since they're playing there, Vegas likes them by a good amount. And, you know, I just think that Oregon right now is the more complete team as both offensively and defensively. I mean, Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. are both very special quarterbacks. They've made memorable throw after memorable throw in plays all season long. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, I trust Oregon's defense more than I trust Washington's. And so I think through four quarters of football, I like Oregon in this one. It's tough to beat a really good team two times in a single season. So I think that will ultimately kind of be the difference maker for Oregon. And, you know, what's crazy is, like, there's so much on the line with this game, because not only is it like the conference championship, it's basically a de facto play-in game for the playoff. And also it's kind of, you know, the last chance to really make a big statement for the Heisman Trophy. Like, you know, Heisman Trophy winners, regardless of like their stats and stuff like that, they're a lot of times they are noted for like how they perform in those big games. So this, it doesn't really get much bigger than this, to be honest. Like, the only times that I can really think that were like bigger might've been when Tebow was still at Florida and he was like playing those epic SEC championship games against Alabama. Like, it feels like that. So, you know, I think this is an epic game, but I do like Oregon.
Yeah, I think you'll get Oregon by at least 2 touchdowns. I think their defense is really good.
Wow.
They lost a close game at Washington, which is, you know, a really tough place to play. Seattle's pretty loud over there. They have some pretty loud fans. And yeah, it's tough to beat the same team twice in one season, especially when they're so evenly matched. Now, I do think Washington has a little bit of that it factor, kind of like the Eagles do, where like they seem to have, like, not always play their best, but they seem to find a way to win.
They always find a way. Yep.
Yeah, they always find a way. However, I just think Oregon's too good, and I think that's going to be really – I think Oregon's going to keep that at arm's length and really be in control of the game.
Nice. Okay.
All right, next one. So I guess this is at the big noon kickoff. For some reason, it's not the Big Ten. So for our championship, we get to enjoy a night game. It's just too bad Penn State couldn't make it.
Is it allowed? Is that allowed for a, you know, marquee Big Ten game to not be the big noon kickoff? I thought that was, you know, like woven into the rules of the universe at this point.
Well, this is actually on ABC Act, technically, but this is the only noon game that I'm seeing with ranked teams. So we got number 18 Oklahoma State at number 7 Texas. How do you think that game's rolling?
Yeah, I think it's Texas. Texas, you know, they have that one loss to Oklahoma where they had just a furious drive to end the Red River rivalry. I think just talent-wise, collectively, I think they have a serious edge. And so I just think that Texas can and should win this game.
All right. Yeah, I got Texas by at least 2 touchdowns. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 3. I feel like there's a real big difference between Texas and Oklahoma and the rest of the conference. So leave it at that. 4 o'clock, we got number 1 Georgia and number 8 Alabama.
Yep. So I know there's a lot of fervor and a lot of excitement about Alabama after that dramatic win at the end of the Iron Bowl. But I just think that Georgia, you know, even though they haven't like been as loud, I guess I'll say, in terms of like the entire college football season, like they've strangely kind of flown under the radar as like one of the like 1 or 2 best teams in college football, because they've just quietly just destroyed all the opponents that have come their way. Like, you know, Carson Beck, he's just kind of, he's there playing amazing at quarterback. And like the biggest news or the biggest whatever was like Brock Bowers got hurt and he missed a couple of weeks. Like, that's all you really heard about Georgia, but you always knew how good they were. I think that Georgia is going to win this game. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be like within 7 points if I had to take a guess. But I just think that Georgia just collectively is still just so rock solid and good. And they have a couple different ways to beat you. Like I said, Carson Beck is playing really well right now, but Georgia's always been able to run the ball really well as well. So I think that, you know, when it's all said and done, Jalen Milroe is special, but, you know, I just think that Georgia's going to be too much for them.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that same train of thought. I've kind of flip-flop on this one, but at the end of the day, I think I'm going to take Georgia by 4 points. I think it's going to come down to the last possession, and I think that, you know, Georgia kind of reminds me of Michigan, like really good defense, quarterback just does his job, and good run game. So, yeah, give me the Bulldogs. Another 4 o'clock game, we got 10-2 SMU at number 22 Tulane, who's 11-1. Who do you have in the American Athletic Conference?
Yeah, so I got Tulane. I actually really like Tulane this season. They lost that one against Ole Miss, but they're another team out there that's just been really steady Eddie all season long. They're a good team. They're well coached. The record shows it. So I like the green wave here.
Green wave. My dad taught at Midwest, and their mascot is the Mustang. So I'm going to go SMU here.
Okay.
They're going to be in the ACC next year, and I think they're excited about that. And I think they're going to ball out, and I think you're going to see them pull off the upset.
Cool. All right.
All right. 8 o'clock, night game going on at the same time as the Big Ten. ACC championship. We got Louisville and Florida State. Who do you got?
I'm rooting for Florida State here, but that's just because I don't want the Cardinals to win the conference and, you know, sneak a New Year's Six bowl appearance away from Penn State. But, you know, in all actuality, I do think that, like, Louisville is good. You know, their record obviously shows it, but, you know, they've also had like a handful of like down moments. Now, granted, they've been able to kind of minimize those moments and really make sure that they're not as like detrimental as they possibly could be. That being said, like, Florida State is still just like loaded with talent. You know, it's going to be a challenge without Jordan Travis out there, but, you know, they still got Keon Coleman out there, a wide receiver who can make just about any quarterback look good. So I like the Noles here, but I think it's going to be super close, like 3 points difference.
Okay. Did you hear about Keon Coleman's pregame meal?
I did. It's crazy. Like, that's like a meal that you get for like a family.
Right. It was like 2 spicy chickens with cheese and extra mayo, medium fry, 10 piece McNuggets, and like an Oreo McFlurry.
That's
before every game. Like,
that's a meal.
Yeah, that would make me want to like
throw up,
right? Like, especially if you're doing like all out sprinting. And but I don't know, some people, I don't know, when you're young, you can just do whatever you want, I guess.
That's true. Yeah. What do you got?
Yeah. So I have Louisville actually pulling off the upset. I just think without, you know, Jordan Travis, it's going to be too much for the Seminoles to overcome. And Florida seemed to be doing well against them until they decided to like spit in the Florida State player's face. And then that was just a huge momentum swing, and Florida really couldn't get back on track after that. So I do think Florida State's a good team, but I think Jeff Baum, I think he's going to pull off the upset here.
Okay.
All right. We got the sign-stealing Wolverines and the Iowa Hawkeyes. Big Ten Championship, 8 o'clock, last game of the evening. Who you got?
Man, yeah, it's Michigan. It's 100% Michigan. Somebody on Reddit, I think, put it best, and he was an Iowa fan, so he had kind of like a very kind of lucid overview and kind of thought about this whole thing. And it's that, like, Michigan doesn't have to do anything flashy. They just have to not screw up. So they don't have to put the ball in the air. They don't have to like do all these, like, they don't need any style points. They win and they're in. Like, that's the bottom line. They could win by 1 or they could win by 100. They're still going to be in the college football playoff once it's all said and done, as long as they win this game. So they just have to keep the ball on the ground like they've been doing all season. Like, basically, he was saying they don't have to do anything different than what they've done through a majority of this entire season. And that's just going to be more than enough. Like, Iowa's defense is good, but they can't hold up forever. I mean, you saw that against Penn State. They started the game out hot, but then once Penn State's defense just kept getting the ball back for them, like every 30 seconds, the defense just can't hold on that long. So it's going to be Michigan. It's going to be Michigan by a lot, like, probably by at least 20 points. So, you know, like, it saddens me to say, but like a 13-0 Harbaugh sign stealing team is going to be going to the playoffs, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny the way you're describing the game. You're like, okay, Michigan just has to be a better version of Iowa to beat Iowa. Like,
basically that's what we did.
Yeah, pretty much. So you just got to beat Iowa at their own game, and you'll be good. But in terms of how the game plays out, do you think that, one, Michigan can hold Iowa to a shutout, and two, do you think Iowa can win by 31 points or more? Or sorry, Michigan can win by 31 points or more?
Yes to both of those, if they want to. I mean, Michigan's defense is good enough to hold most of the offenses in the Big Ten to a shutout. And Iowa's without Cade McNamara, their offense already sucked even when he was a part of it. Like, this is such a weird dystopian like version of coaching that we're witnessing with Iowa, because they're ranked in like the middle teens. They have a chance to win the Big Ten, but they have like a dead man walking in Brian Ferentz on the sideline with them because he's the offensive coordinator who's expected to be fired like once his game is complete. Like, it's such a weird set of circumstances to like look at a coaching staff and say, okay, like this is the offense. Like, this is the last hope, like from an offensive perspective, that the Big Ten has to beat Michigan. And so it's just such a weird thing. So yeah, I mean, Michigan, if it really wants to, it can absolutely shut them out. And I do think that it can, like, it can put up 40 on Iowa's defense. It's not all going to come in the first half. I think Iowa's defense is good enough to hold them to like 17 in the first half, but the floodgates are going to open at some point.
Yeah, I think I expect Michigan to win by like 28 maybe. So I think our spread is actually going to be better. I think like Iowa might get a couple field goals, like maybe up to 13 at most. I can see Iowa getting, and I think the first half will be pretty close. Like, I think their defense might just kind of, especially if they just run the ball like they did against us. You know, I think it might be a pretty low scoring game, and I think Michigan might even just settle and keep them at arm's length. So I think our score is going to be better. But yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of punts in this one. And speaking of that, did you see like the two Iowa fans at like the Nebraska game with, they just had like t-shirts that said punts?
Yeah, I did. That's good. Yeah, with like a historically low over under for total points in the game. Like that was, you know, what a way for the Big Ten as we know it to just go out. You know, the traditional Big Ten going out with a bang with good defenses and just a shit ton of punts.
Oh yeah, this is too funny. Yeah, last game, they got the last game of the season. You just got two offenses that can't do anything, and that's Big Ten football, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's such a juxtaposition. You know, I forget what game it was. It might have even been like Michigan, Ohio State, but they put up a graphic that it's like, oh, like here are, you know, where the offenses kind of rank for the Big Ten as a whole, like averaging and stuff like that. But here are their defenses, and you know, obviously they're a lot better collectively than their offenses. But then they add these four teams, meaning, you know, USC, UCLA, Washington, Oregon, and the offenses take a big jump here. You know, so they're like, so it's very interesting to see, or, you know, it's interesting to kind of speculate how these offenses are going to do against these Big Ten defenses and how, you know, their defenses are going to kind of work to match like what they see across their new conference and stuff like that. So it's just kind of funny because we added, you know, we added four teams that are just like the anti Big Ten West. Like, there's actual, there's actual offense there.
I think it might make our games more fun to watch, honestly.
Oh, it's 100% going to be more fun. Like, even, I mean, our games have become so, like, predictable outside of Ohio State and Michigan. Well, I mean, those have become predictable, too, for a bad reason. But, like, they're so predictable at this point when it's not Ohio State and Michigan, like, to the point where even Julie is like, why don't they, like, play harder teams and stuff like that? Like, and we're playing, you know, everybody outside in the Big Ten, and I'm like, this is who they have. Like, this is who is on their schedule. Like, they can't help that these teams are so average and they're in the Big Ten Conference. Like, this is just what the deal is. So, you know, they're playing the teams that they're scheduled, and it's not Penn State's fault that they can't help but just crush them, you know? So we're getting a boost here, man. Like, all these games back to back, like, this is, you know, like, the SEC is getting a run for its money, like, with these like strength of schedule arguments.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. Was that the last one?
Yeah. So based off of your projections, who are the four you have in the college football playoff?
Oh, all right. Yep. So I am going to go Georgia, Michigan, Florida State, and Oregon.
Okay. I'm going to go Oregon, Texas, Georgia, and Michigan. Those are my four.
Gotcha.
Okay. That's who I got. Which would be interesting.
We only differ on Texas versus Florida State, correct?
Yes. So
got it.
That's the big one. I feel good about that though.
I think, yeah, if Florida State loses, it's going to be Texas. Because, you know, with a 12-1 Big 12 champion and 12-1 non-champion Florida State, like, yeah, it's an easy decision.
I do think Washington, though, they have a good argument even if they do lose to Oregon.
I guess, but I still kind of feel like, you know, the 12-1 conference champion versus a 12-1 non-champion, you know, that's like kind of the deciding factor in my mind. Now, granted, like the committee has gone the other way in situations like that in the past, you know, starting all the way back with 2016 where, you know, Penn State got boned. We all know how that story played out, but yeah, so I don't know, that'll be interesting. They were like weird in their most recent ranking selection show. Did you see that? Like they were just giving some like very odd answers for like how and why they were placing certain teams where they did. Like it kind of even felt like not even they believed like what they were saying.
Yeah. I didn't watch the show. I was working, but
yeah.
Yeah. I never can, like, there's so many, like those top eight teams, they're all so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just, and really, I think even Missouri is up to that level, and like they only have two losses. And but yeah. It's tough to pick. It really, really is tough to pick four. If you have eight, like you're solid. All your teams that, like, it's crazy to think that Ohio State at 11-1 is not going to make it, and potentially Alabama at 11-2. But like, if Alabama wins, do you keep out a 12-1 Georgia? Like, it's just, there's going to be some. Yeah. Some teams getting a raw deal, man.
And the selection committee just does not do themselves any favors with how they're kind of justifying certain teams or certain things, because, you know, they throw in these things of like, okay, we need to select like the four best teams, but then they say things like, okay, we also need to like look at like who are the most deserving teams and stuff like that. And those are two like completely different things, because if you're looking at like the most deserving, like your 13-0 conference champions are the most deserving. And that would be Michigan, Georgia, and Florida State if all three of those teams win. However, Florida State would probably not be within the four best teams in college football right now. Like, whether it's fair or not, like without Jordan Travis, like they're not the same team. So then that opens the door for your one loss Washington or your one loss Alabama and these other teams.
And Texas.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so I just think it's very strange to see these people who are in charge of these like multi-million dollar athletic departments and stuff like that, like just kind of figure out ways to paint themselves into a corner with these like selection criteria. So, nonetheless.
Well, then you also have like Oregon and Ohio State are both ranked ahead of Texas.
Yeah, exactly. So then you have to, like, on top of like those few things that you have to kind of factor in, then you have to kind of do the mental gymnastics to convince the other people in the room, as well as the court of like public opinion and, you know, in terms of a college football fandom, that they were deserving of jumping those teams because of XYZ. Like, it's just such a weird exercise. And everybody's always going to be mad. It's not going to be any different this year. Everybody's still going to be mad. You know, we got to get to the expanded playoff so that, you know, we can have, you know, more conversations like at that 13 spot, because, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but I think it's going to be a heck of a lot better than trying to, you know, kind of hash out four teams out of six that are probably all deserving.
Yeah, I think so too. That is not a job I would want this year, to like have to pick four teams to go, because you're going to, you know, guaranteed to piss somebody off. Like, it's just not going to work out that there's like four teams that it's like, yep, those four should all totally go. Like,
yeah,
you can make the argument for Florida State, Michigan, Georgia, they're undefeated, but you're not going to have four undefeated. So you're going to have some one loss teams in there, and I guess Washington could win too. It might all work out. What if it works out that way? There's just four undefeated teams, and that's how it is.
Crazy. They would probably like pop some champagne like at the selection meeting, because they're like, hey, like we got our four. Like, we don't have to do any more work. We got our four.
Oh, dude, they like I wonder if they're just like on the down low, like trying to pay the refs and being like, oh, like just make this happen, others, so we don't have to deal with this.
No, man, they've all just hired Connor Stallions to be, you know, kind of that one-off consultant for them. He's prowling around the other team's playbook right now.
Yep. College football playoff committee. They know what to do. So
they know what's up. So no, mm-hmm. Good stuff. So obviously we got plenty of football to watch this weekend, even though Penn State's unfortunately not going to be a part of it. But on the Penn State football front, though, we did have some news and rumblings about the offensive coordinator search. Now, you know, this has kind of been something that we've been waiting for an update on. We did know that James Franklin was meeting with a bunch of the people that are on his wish list, or, you know, people that he wanted to speak to as a candidate over this past weekend. We haven't heard any updates on that front, but a couple of names have actually emerged as like people that have been linked to this job at Penn State. And they are Marion Barber out of UNLV, as well as Andy Kotelnicki, which I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, out of Kansas. Now, I actually think that both of these names are rather intriguing, you know, particularly Barber out of UNLV, because he created an offense, or he led an offense that was in top 20 in total offense. So he overcame, or he like statistically had a better offense than the likes of like Texas, Ole Miss, Arizona, Texas A&M, Missouri. You know, so there are a bunch of like really good offenses that he was kind of putting up big numbers for. And now granted, like they're not playing in like the same conference as like a lot of these like SEC or Big 12 schools and whatnot, but that's still rather impressive. And on the Kansas side with Kotelnicki, he really like manufactured a great offense. They ranked number 30 in terms of total offense in 2023. Before Jalen Daniels got hurt against Oklahoma, they were like really clicking on all cylinders. So there's been some rumblings about both of those names, but nothing has really been confirmed yet. Hasn't even been like, you know, confirmations of like, oh, like this meeting happened on this day, or James Franklin arrived in, you know, such and so place to meet with this person. But any thoughts or reactions on these two names?
I think they're good candidates, but give me Joe Moorhead.
Yeah, you're still on the bring him back train.
Yeah, bring it back. That's the last time you won a Big Ten championship. You know it works. So I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility to just check in and be like, hey, do you want to continue to be the head coach at 2-10 Akron? Or do you want to come to Penn State and go to the college football playoff?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's fair.
And Joe Grady up there at Buffalo, the Buffalo Bills. Yeah, try to get him down there.
Yeah, that's true. Ask. Yeah, I mean, we saw what he was capable of with that offense since Ken Dorsey was let go. You know, so I would be shocked if James Franklin did not at least extend a feeler to him.
Yeah, you got to do that because Penn State is in dire need for an offensive coordinator that they have not had since the 2017-2018 season.
Yeah, for sure. And just a quick, like, correction of myself. So it was not Marion Barber. I don't understand why I thought that name.
The Dallas Cowboys running back. I was about to ask you that.
Yeah, not quite. So the name that I was thinking of, which is the correct name, is Brennan Marion. He is the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at UNLV, the architect of really effective offense this past season.
He's an architect.
Aren't we all?
And I think Moorhead's last year is 2016-2017. So I might put a correction there. I said 2017-2018. I think after we won the Big Ten, he got hired at Mississippi State.
No, he was here for the year after.
Okay. So yeah. I was right originally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then you can say, okay, I don't have any notes at it. I'm just perfect. Don't make mistakes on the podcast.
Sure. But so hopefully I'm hoping that we'll get some resolution to this pretty soon, just because the coaching carousel has like started, you know, turning. Texas A&M. Oh, did you see like the firestorm that almost happened with Texas A&M hiring Mark Stoops?
I did not, out of Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, it was crazy. So I forget who it was, but somebody reported that, I guess, Texas A&M was very close to hiring Mark Stoops to be the next coach there. And basically what happened after that was just an eruption of discontent, like from their fan base on social media, basically just like all kind of simultaneously being like, you know, you have all this money, you spent all this money to get rid of Jimbo Fisher, and this is the solution. This is the replacement that you're going to come up with. Like, you're going to spend all this money to like get Mark Stoops. So the fans were just definitely not pleased. I guess if the reportings are accurate, it was the Board of Regents at Texas A&M that put the kibosh on hiring Mark Stoops. So then that is what caused them to kind of veer off and then go target Mike Elko out of Duke, which just want to put a feather in my cap. I called that one. but yeah, so that was it. So it was like one of those funny moments where the fans like successfully bullied their program into hiring or not hiring a specific person.
Didn't the same thing happen at like Tennessee with like Greg Schiano, and then he ended up at Rutgers?
It did. Yes, it did. Yeah, because they were like right there to hire him, and like the fans just lost their freaking minds.
Well, he's actually doing a pretty good job at Rutgers for like being at Rutgers.
He is, yeah. And Tennessee has had a couple of guys, you know, over the past couple of years. So
that's true. So
we've got on the side of Duke, though, since Elko was hired by Texas A&M, Manny Diaz has been linked as a potential candidate for the Duke job.
I think he'll get it.
You think he'll take it? You think Duke is enticing enough for him?
I think it might be. They had a good year and got things going, and I think that he'll get some guys through the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. Stack up that defense, maybe some of our guys, which would be a negative. But yeah, I think he'd be a good candidate, and I think he'd like to be kind of the guy in charge again. He did a really great job on the defense, but I think he would enjoy having some input on the offense as well, so that way his defense is not in as bad of a position.
That's fair. He would be without, though, star quarterback Riley Leonard. He entered the transfer portal following the news of Mike Elko's departure. Do you think that would impact things at all? Or do you think he would just try to go get somebody out of the transfer portal regardless?
It could have an impact. He could try to get someone out of the portal, or he could convince him to stay.
Yeah, that's fair. That's true. Yep. So, you know, it's hard to say. Coaching carousel has just started to turn. We're probably going to see more firings and, you know, more people moving on after conference championship weekend has wrapped up. So we'll see. But I think that's just about it on the football side of things. Vince, do you got anything else here, or do you want to talk other sports?
Yeah, let's talk about our other sports. Talk about basketball first. Women's basketball has been on a roll. They beat Providence at home, and they beat Radford this evening by about 40 points. So
casual.
Women's team off to a really good start. I believe they're 6-1, 7-1, somewhere around that mark. Their lone blemish is to number 8 USC, who they only lost to by 1 point in the Bahamas. So
in the last second, yeah.
Lady Lions off to a really hot start. The men's team, they didn't have a great time at their ESPN Invitational. They were competitive early on in the first half, and then about halfway through the second half, the wheels would start to fall apart. They lost all three of their games. They lost to number 12, Texas A&M. They lost to Butler, and then they started with Mike Rhodes' former team, VCU, which was a little bit alarming. Kanye Clay did come down with an injury in that game, and he's their top scorer. And him and Ace Baldwin Jr. are really the only ones who can operate the point position at a high level. So that really puts them in a difficult position. So a bit of a bummer that they couldn't come out of there without at least, you know, one. I was hoping they would get 2 wins out of that tournament. That was my goal for them. So a little disappointed. They definitely looked like they could compete with A&M. I thought that was their best game. And then kind of each game gradually got a little worse throughout the tournament. At the end of the day, they got to be better on the boards. They got to be more physical and stronger. And they got to knock down threes, especially if you're you know, a team that's a little more longer and lankier, you need to knock down those shots. So Saturday, they got the Bucknell Bison coming into town. That is their last non-conference game before the Big Ten play starts. So, you know, Bucknell hasn't been good for a while, so I expect that the Nittany Lions are going to really win by quite a bit. I think they'll win by 30 points over Bucknell, and might be a good game for Kanye Clary to try to get some rest. It seemed that I wasn't sure if he injured his, it was like, they said he injured his hand, but his like forearm was wrapped for some reason. So tough to say exactly what the injury was. They'll be okay without him for Bucknell. Maryland, you really need him back for that one. So hopefully he's, you know, back for Maryland next Wednesday. Big weekend for hockey. Women's hockey is playing Robert Morris. The men are playing number 8 Minnesota Friday at 7 and then Saturday at 6. So the one on Saturday will also be on Big Ten Network. So I know I'm definitely going to catch it there. Football's going on as well. And then we got women's volleyball, who is in the NCAA tournament. They're playing Thursday. So if you're listening, that's probably today. By the time I get the podcast out, they're playing at 5:30 versus Yale. That would be on ESPN Plus. And if they win, they'll be playing Friday at 6:30 versus the winner of Kansas and Omaha. So a lot of Nittany Lion games going on. And then also, circling back to the women's basketball team, they'll be playing Monday at home, 6 p.m. versus the West Virginia Mountaineers. So hopefully our Lady Lions have the same luck as the football team versus West Virginia.
Yep.
Oh, and then, of course, we got track this weekend. Speaking of Bucknell, the track team is going to be there to start their indoor season. I've run at Bucknell's track, and it's one of the more enjoyable tracks I've run at. It's nice. Got a good vibe to it, and I always enjoyed competing there. So they'll be there, and then swimming has a meet. Men's and women's swimming has a meet at Princeton this weekend as well. So a lot of different sports going on. And then on Sunday, wrestling's also going to be home versus Lehigh. That match is at 2:00.
Very nice. Yeah, hopefully, you know, well, I guess maybe not hopefully. We'll see if Lehigh can score any points against the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, they did have one guy wrestling at one of the lower weight classes. I think it was 141 maybe. That was at that like All-Star Classic. And mm-hmm. I think he won over the Virginia Tech guy, maybe.
Hmm.
I forget who was wrestling. But the Lehigh guy, you know, one of their guys is really good. So
yep.
It'll be interesting to see if they score any points.
Yeah. No, he's probably good for a couple points then.
Yep.
Cool. You got anything else?
That's all I got. Do you want to put a bow on it?
Yeah, let's do it. This was a good discussion. So, yeah, we'll have more to talk about the winners of the conference championship games during our next podcast. But until then, thank you all for listening. As always, you can visit our website at nittanyblues.com. You can learn more about the show, about Vince and I. You can learn how to support the show. You can also visit our merch shop at shop.nittanyblues.com. We've got all kinds of cool designs that we guarantee you won't find anywhere else. But other than that, Vince, feel free to close us out.
Yeah, if you guys want to help us out of the pod here, tell your friends, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. If you enjoyed the show, leave a review so other Nittany Lion fans like you can find us. And as always, thank you for listening. And we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues Podcast. We'll see you next time.